Yep.
All right, this is the HRSD finance meeting for April the 15th, 2021. And Mr. Jay, I'm gonna turn it over to you for a finance report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, everyone. I'm really happy to be here today. I was a little nervous getting this presentation done by today because I got my second Moderna shot on Monday. I thought it was going to knock me out, but I was able to get this presentation done. But big picture, it's all good news. So, can y'all see that screen? Well, let me move that.
Yeah, I got it.
Just a real quick agenda. I'm just going to briefly go over the budget. We went over a lot of it last time. Then talk about the CIP. But really the meat and potatoes is the financial forecast and comparison to the previous forecast. It's a great idea that Ted had. And then also walk y'all through the rates that we're proposing for fiscal year 22. And we do have some revenue policy changes we'd like to propose. In terms of the budget at a glance, we talked about the revenue coming in at with a 9% rate increase. That's at $357 million. This is kind of the simple math page. Operating expenses went down slightly. So I think last month I showed you a 1.6% increase. That's because the actual year-over-year increase was 1.55%. We had a minor change in the budget, which dropped it down to 1.53%. So it rounded down. Also, in terms of debt service, this is something we didn't show you last month. We are estimating $65 million. About 5.1 is projected new. And that's we'll talk about that in the financial forecast. And so if you do the math, that leaves $114 million for cash for our CIP. But if you look at the fiscal year 22 projected CapEx, that's $290 million. And so since we don't have enough cash to pay for that $290 million, we've got to finance $176 million. Some of that will come from clean water loans, WIFIA, or line of credit. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. In terms of the CIP, the 10-year CIP is at $3 billion, 20 years at $5.1 billion. So this is just a slide that our communications department helped us prepare. If you look at where we're spending our money, where we spend a dollar, 50 cents goes to infrastructure projects, and that's our debt service plus our cash for our CIP. So the bulk of all those rate increases are really driven by infrastructure projects, not really by operational expenses. So 25% a quarter goes to that, and 25% goes to our employees. That's mixed salaries and fringe. Talking about our CIP, 83% is regulatory. This is the same as from our meeting we have from our first CIP meeting. 17% is everything else. Again, it's $3 billion for the first 10, for the next 10 years. Over 200 projects. So our SWIP projects now go through fiscal year 36, and we'll talk about that in the financial forecast, some of those projects that had moved out. Again, we've got two high priority wet weather projects now. We've got some from 2020 to 2031, that's our high priority one projects. And then our high priority two projects are the money spent between fiscal year 31 and 40. And so this is the regional wet weather plan amendment that's currently being supposed to be signed any month now. I wouldn't say any day, but any month now, hopefully sometime this year. But this is the first year we are showing this change because previous forecast had beyond 2030, about $3 billion worth of projects all the way out through 2053. So it's a significant change and you're gonna see kind of like thematically, what an impact that has had in our financial forecast. In terms of project types, for the next 10 years, it's 51% SWIFT, and then pipelines, and then wastewater treatment. And in terms of the adjustments to the annual spending targets, about $58 million is driving this fiscal year 22 as a carryover from fiscal year 21. In fiscal year 21, we were projected to spend $235 million, but it looks like we're going to land at about $177 million in fiscal year 21. And so a lot of that's going to carry over into 22. So that's kind of what's driving this first year. But these next few years are a mix of new projects, but mostly the James River SWIFT project absorbing that cost increase because that came in the last few months when we approved that design build that was different from the last published budget. And then we have a decline here, and what we did was we moved Williamsburg and the York River project out beyond the 10-year program, so that's kind of where you see these declines. We also eliminated the West Point upgraded. So we moved these two projects, but we eliminated this project, and that was $30 million. So this is what the spend looks like, and it's grouped by the major program. So you can see the SWIFT is the dark blue and what that spend looks like, and it starts to trail off. And then the next big project is the rehab plan projects. They have to be done by 25, so that's why you don't see anything beyond 2025. And then the high priority projects. So you've got high priority one, and then beyond 10 years is high priority two. So yellow is the contingency. The red is the fiscal year caps that we've established in our financial forecast. So you can see, like, these are some ominous work that has to be done by design and construction. 400 million, 500 million, 400 million. And I think this year might be the highest year ever if we land at 177 million. So, you know, being able to ramp up and to spend this kind of money is going to be daunting. So just as a reminder, the debt service coverage ratio, it's a key financial metric, and it's important not only for us, but for rating agencies and our bondholders, because they want to make sure that we can pay them back. And so if you take our revenues minus expenses, how much cash do we have left over to pay our debt back? And so if you only have a 1x debt service coverage, you just have barely enough money to pay the bondholders back your bond payment schedule. And so if something bad happens, like ransomware or a hurricane, you might not be able to make your payment. And so that's why we've targeted 2x coverage. That gives us sufficient cushion. So if anything bad happens, that we will be able to cover and make our bondholder payments. Because if your debt service coverage goes below one, technically you're in default. Well, you're in default if you're lower than what's in our trust agreement, but it also means you're probably going bankrupt if your debt service coverage is below one, because you don't have enough money to pay the bondholders back. And so Ted had a brilliant idea in 2015, and he was looking at our debt service coverage ratio, and he said, hey, we need to ask our financial advisor to compare us to our peers. And this was a key metric that we were really low on. So this is also the same year that I started in 2015. And one of the first tasks he gave me was to rebuild the whole financial model and to reset our trajectory. And that's what we did. And so what we've done as an organization is we've really just executed on that strategy that we developed once we had that information. And it was great that the commission agreed with us, and we targeted that 2x coverage. And so since that point, we've really went on a really great trajectory and just continued to execute. And we've had like 3 rating agency upgrades in these years once they saw like a good trend of the increase. But it's a really a good news story, and just really highlights the importance of having a financial forecast and a financial plan, and also have the internal execution, and you can really see the results. And it doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time. And this is just part of, and really highlights our organization's culture that we're able to execute on this plan. So this year, we launched a new financial model that we're calling Orion. Orion's a hunter, and Aaron Girardi laughs that, you know, as a hunter, we're always hunting for lowest cost of capital, always hunting for extra money and things like that. But, you know, just to be comfortable, this was a busy year for us during the budget cycle. So we ran 2 models side by side. So I updated the old model, worked with PFM on building this new financial model that ties in with our existing account code structure, has a new debt optimization model that's actually lives outside of the current model. So it's just it's a very, very sophisticated model that went into this financial forecast. And you'll see why we have to have ultimate confidence in it, because what I'm going to show you is a significant change from what we published previously. And a lot of that is because we have certainty with WIPIA. When we closed at $1.05 billion and we locked in our rate on that much debt to be financed at 30-year treasury, that gives us a lot of certainty out into the future. And working with with VRA and DEQ, they've given us how much they feel like we can borrow from the Clean Water Program, which gives us a great subsidized rate. He told me this week that a 20-year rate now on clean water is like 1%, which is just phenomenal. And then we have certainty on the regional weather plan. Like, again, I've talked about probably Ted's most underrated accomplishment is being able to negotiate that wet weather plan. And almost $3 billion is going out of our capital program from 2030 and beyond. And that just has a significant impact on our future finances. And you'll see that. So one of the big changes is our projected rate increases are going to be reduced from 2028 and beyond. Again, this is the big changes in the capital expenses that we don't have to pay for or don't have to plan for out into the future. And again, we have included the WIVIA tranches. It's just a very complicated math trying to model clean water and WIVIA because they're reimbursement based. And so in the old model, it assumed that we were doing revenue bonds. And so with revenue bonds, if you're issuing a $200 million bond, then you're paying interest day one. So that's really easy to model. But with the WIVIA tranches and the clean water tranches, because it's a reimbursement base, it really depends on the shape of the spend because you're only paying interest on what you're borrowing. And plus WIVIA, you have a delay that you can delay the debt. And then you can also reshape the debt where we have a lot of the first tranche out into the tail end. You know, we don't even pay a lot of principal until the tail end. So there's a lot of shaping of our debt service that we're doing a lot of optimization. So that's why we use PFM. We're trying to save a lot of money in interest, and we're trying to have make sure our debt service makes sense because that affects our coverage. And you'll kind of see that when I show you what it looks like. And also, this is the first year, as you know, in the last budget cycle, a lot of HRSD projects were written into the latest bill for WQIF grants, like the specific projects. And so we're estimating the amount of money that we're going to get for those grants. Again, that assumes that the Commonwealth has the money to pay those grants. So we took a conservative assumption on how much. And so this is a money slide, the money slide. One of the money slides is, if you look at our, the gray is what we had proposed for rate increases last year. The blue is what we're proposing this year. Same. But until 2028, significant reduction in the rates. We can go flat at about 4.5% off into the future. And so what that means is, if you look at how much revenues we needed between 22 and 2053 last year, because we're using 2053, because that would have been the end of the consent decree if Ted had not negotiated what he was able to negotiate, the amount of ratepayer savings between the previous and the current is about $2.8 billion that gets to stay in ratepayer households. So significant savings for our ratepayers. And like I said, it's probably going to be one of Ted's most underrated accomplishments, being able to negotiate that consent decree.
Hey, Jay, this is Rick. On that slide, does that includes all of the SWIFT projects being implemented?
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah, like when you take $3 billion of wet weather projects from 2030 to 2053, that has a huge impact on what ratepayers have to pay. It just has a tremendous impact. And also the other thing too that's driving the savings is, again, we always look for the lowest cost of capital. That's the WIFIA savings, that's using clean water. All of that is rolled into how we can afford to drop our rate increases so significantly off into the future.
Very good.
Yeah, and that's why I was saying is like, that's why we ran two models. I had PFM triple quadruple check the numbers because, you know, I don't want to show this to the commission and then be like next year, like, oh, we made a math error or something like that. But, you know, we had to have a lot of confidence being able to show something like this to the committee and to the commission. Yeah, really, really excited about that. And again, like I said, I can't give Ted enough credit because a tremendous accomplishment. So this is what our debt service coverage looks like. As you recall, our target is 2x. And so as you can see, we're ramping up. And then once the first SWIFT facilities, so gray again was last year, blue is this year. You start to see the debt service coverage decline. Actually, what's kind of going on behind the scenes here is the model is conservatively projecting that we might need a new revenue bond. But again, it all depends on the spend. And you saw, like, in this time period, we're spending between $400 and $500 million in this year. If we're not able to spend that, you're not going to see coverage drop to 1.8, 1.9. So this is, like, kind of behind the scenes. I'm not too worried about this because, you know, even if we are only to spend 80% of the spend for these 3 years, these numbers will all change. So I'm not too worried about this belly in the coverage here. And then you see coverage. Yes.
Just and remind the 2.0 is a target. It's right. There's nothing required by any of our agreements to keep the 2.0. So it's an operational target.
Right. And our policy is 1.4. And in our trust agreements, it's like 1.2. So it's just a conservative target and it's in line with our similarly rated agencies. And I'll show you a comparison of that later too.
Well, and historically, our spending has always been behind. Not a lot, but it has been behind what we project.
Right. And that's why I was saying, it was like, that's why I'm not too worried about this. I think that this is a conservative look at coverage. And so if we're, like I said, if we're only at 80, 90% spend, this will all be fine in the 2x range. And then you see coverage start to ramp up again. But then again, this is when the first, I think this is when York River starts in 36, and this is when Williamsburg starts in 37. And then you start to see a level out of about 2x. And again, this is all with that reduced rate increases, but that 4.5% is driving these coverage numbers. So it works, is the story. And so Ted had another brilliant idea of doing a forecast comparison on how good is our crystal ball. And so let me just explain these graphs because it gets a little bit confusing just kind of looking at it. So this is the year that it was published. So in 2010, I just picked this forecast year. So this is what it was forecast. And so in 2010, we thought the wastewater rate in fiscal year 22 would be $5.37. And so significantly lower than what we had projected in fiscal year 16 and fiscal year 22, but we'll talk a little bit about that later. And so again, in fiscal year 2010, we thought the wastewater rate in fiscal year 28, which is the furthest that the fiscal year 10 forecast went out to, would be 754. And again, in fiscal 15 and 22, they're relatively close. So just wanted to explain the graphs because they're all gonna kind of look like this. So this is the actual year that they are projecting on the bottom. So in terms of total revenues in fiscal year 10, they had a significantly higher projection for revenue because in 2010, we didn't even think about water consumption was declining. I don't think that we thought about that. And I think till 2014 is when we started to incorporate a minus 1% water consumption decline. And so that's why you see in 2015 and 2022, our revenues are almost in line with what we thought they needed to be. And in fiscal year 2010, again, fiscal 15 and 22 are relatively close. So in terms of total operating expenses, this is a really good news story. In fiscal year 2010, we thought the operating expenses would be over $200 million in fiscal year 22, but we're sitting on $178 million. Again, that's a mix of lots of different things. Maybe they used a higher than expected inflation rate, but also, you know, you think about what the research and development team are doing in terms of keeping utilities and chemicals low. And so you see that now, like in terms of the fruit of the labor, in terms of being able to keep OPEX expenses low. Just think this was a 12-year projection from 2010 to 2022 where they thought operating expenses would be. Again, you can also see it in where they thought we would be in 2028 at $276 million. But for us, it's $231. And that includes, I think, having one or two SWIFT plants online. Well, at least one SWIFT plant online by 2028. So another good news story. So in terms of debt service, this is a finance good story that we could pat ourselves on the back. But in 2010, we thought debt service in fiscal year 22 would be almost $90 million, but we're sitting on about $64 million. Again, looking at clean water, looking at WIFIA, all the refundings we've done, taking advantage of market conditions and low rates, the variable rate debt that Steve Demeck implemented in 2012. So all those things are driving this lower debt service where we're at today. Again, same thing in fiscal year 28, debt service is only projected at 104 million. And I think at least in fiscal year 2010, they weren't even projecting that much capital expenditures in this time frame because there was no SWIFT. I mean, they were dealing with nutrients that were due in 2011 and 2017 and 2022, but SWIFT wasn't even incorporated. So again, you know, being able to control debt service by taking advantage of market conditions and lower rates and using clean water and WIFIA are really driving this debt service low. So in terms of debt service coverage ratio, 193, that's where they thought they'd be in 2022. Not too bad in terms of where they thought we'd be. But look at the forecast from 2015. They thought we'd be at 134. Again, that's due to their projected debt service that I showed on the previous slide. And in fact, if we were at 134, this would have triggered a debt service reserve fund that we would have had to have fund. When that happened, I can't remember what year it happened. We had to fund it. I think it happened in 2013, 2014. We had to fund it with like $44 million essentially overnight. And that's a trust agreement requirement. But look at where we're at today, what we're projected for fiscal year 22 over two. Again, in fiscal year 28, that 1.3 for fiscal year 28, again, that would have triggered the debt service reserve fund. It's below our policy of 1.4, but our projection for 28 is 2.36. So any questions on the comparison to historical? A lot of good news stories, and I thought it was a great idea for Ted to have us go back and look at how we've done and what has changed from those projections.
So the big difference on the debt is what, probably the rate? It's a lot lower than we expected?
Yeah, definitely. So like historical rate, if it has been 5.5% if we were to issue revenue bonds, and we've been getting, like, I think the 20-year clean water rate we got last year was 1.15%. We've refinanced a lot of debt below 3%. We've issued a lot of bonds around 3%. And, you know, we've issued that first tranche of WIFIA at 1.42%. So it's a combination of really just, you know, controlling capital cost and being able to get lower rates.
Jay, if we plowed a little more cash into, I know we didn't do the analysis on how much cash would be spent on CIP, but it would just, it seems to me when you look at these numbers, you know, our rates went up, but all these other things came down a little bit, that we must have been putting a little more cash in that same time frame than we had originally thought we would in 2010. But
I actually have that if you want me to show. So I built this handy dandy pivot. So this is the transfer to CIP. And so, yeah, just like Ted said, they were not putting as much cash into the capital program as we currently are projecting. So this is fiscal year 28. And so we're putting 163 million in their forecast, 120 to 130. And again, look, look at how much cash they were putting in, only 73 to 67, but we're putting in 114.
So when does our 9% rates drop? What year?
You gonna hang on till then, Rick?
Yeah.
They stop at 24 and then we drop to sevens.
24. Okay. So that's what's generating this cash.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we need this. Yeah, so we need this coverage, not only for debt service, but for as the SWIFT plant comes online, those are new operating expenses as well.
Right,
so we need
right.
cash for both pieces.
What, Ted?
I was just going to say, and that the cash also, it really had to be built up front to keep this debt service, the chart Jay showed on with the little bellies in the debt service to keep it up close to debt service coverage close to the two. Mm-hmm. And we could drive that, a future commission could decide they want to drive that lower, could potentially reduce, incrementally reduce those rate increase projections. But the compounding of that over time is so significant that if you drive it down early, you see debt service get way down in those out years. So,
right. weren't we also needing cash on hand for Moody's, the ratings there? Isn't that one of the things that we're talking about for having cash on hand?
Yep, and I'll show you that comparison here in a sec.
Hey, let Jay take it.
But that's a great comment, because those are the two key metrics, is debt service coverage ratio and days cash on hand. And so if you look at the Fitch medians, Fitch and I mean, they're both very similar in terms of what the medians look like. If you're AAA, you've got a ton of cash just sitting around. And so we don't believe that we need to have that much cash sitting around. So this is 10-year averages of all the key metrics. And so days cash on hand, in the next 10 years, we're trying to average around 371. We just don't think you need to have that much cash just sitting around, especially right now. I think we're only earning 13 basis points on our cash. So it's not really, helping us. And you'll see that in our monthly report, what our investment income looks like compared to last year, how it's impacted our risk. You should have like a ton of cash sitting on hand, especially if you're paying interest on debt. So, but in terms of how we compare in the future. So like what Ted had said, if we want to stay AA, we need to use about 40% of our cash, in which we are AA, to pay for our capital program. And one of the things that happens, if you have a high debt service coverage, that means you have a ton of extra cash you're able to put towards your CIP, which means you need to raise your rates even higher than what you currently have to get this AAA rating, where they're only financing 20% of their program. But I think that's why I feel like we're in the sweet spot staying in AA, because I think that's, 60-40 split in terms of cash, debt spend, and generational equity. I think that makes a lot of sense. I understand why these AAA communities are doing this, but it also means that they need to have their region can support higher rates to fund 80% of their CIP with cash. So.
Jay, let me ask this question in terms of us applying for grants. Does our rating affect the grants that we go after in any way?
Our main grants are WQIF, and Ted, correct me if I'm wrong, it's more project-based as opposed to entity-based, but obviously there are grants that are like they're only for poor communities and things like that we don't have access to. And they're traditionally very small money, but WQIF, they're big money grants. And so we're projecting in the next 9 years for $127 million of WQIF grants. So Ted, correct me if I'm wrong, they're all project based on how much it impacts water quality, correct?
Correct. And DEQ actually has a fiscal stress factor that determines how much we actually get, what percentage of eligible cost we get. And that's based on the underlying community. So our ratepayers' communities, basically median household income and other things they build into their fiscal stress analysis. So it doesn't matter how strong we are from a financial position. It's really the region and the individual ratepayers that determine. And we don't benefit from, I think it's washed out a little bit because we do have some pretty challenged communities within our service area, but then we've got some really wealthy communities. And so it does average out. I think we get 60% reimbursement on eligible costs, where if it was just one of our poor communities, I think Norfolk gets 100%, they're fiscally stressed to that point. So if they were to get the grant, a WQIF type grant, they would get 100% of the eligible costs. We only get 60. So it's not really a reflection of our financial position and management. It is a reflection of the region as an aggregated weighted average type.
Oh, yeah. And Norfolk also gets 0% loans. So you don't want to throw them on the bus, but they do qualify for that. But we don't qualify for like a 0% interest rate. So just moving on, again, these are 10-year averages. And so HRSD is right in the pocket, between AA and large entities. This is about where we want to be. Again, this is like that 3.1 coverage. That means they just have a ton of cash to pay for the capital projects. How they're getting there. And they're not having to borrow that much. So that's why they're above 3. And in terms of debt service as a percentage of gross revenues, again, right in where we want to be. And so at the end of the day, what I'm showing you, that 4.5% rate increases will get us where we want to be in terms of, you know, the ratings we want, you know, the targeted debt service coverage, you know, how much cash to debt we want to have. And so end of the day, it works. So any other questions about the forecast before I jump into rates? All right. Oh, shoot, how did I do it? Okay. So the first rate we're going to talk about is our small communities rate. And if you recall, we used to bill the small communities rate based on actual operating costs, and that's how the rate was derived. But the cost to manage small communities collection systems is so high. We changed that methodology, I think in 2016, 2017, to a weighted average metro rate. So we take the HRPDC data and we look at the monthly collection charges by locality, and we do a weighted average, and that's how we come up with our collections rate. And so this year it's $5.74. And keep in mind, we're changing the units. We're not CCF anymore. We're per 1,000 gallons. And one of the reasons why is that's how HRPDC publishes the data. That's how we've always published the data for small communities. And so that's up 2.5%. And the reason that's up 2.5% is because we didn't do any increases in fiscal year 21. And so if we had, this would probably be like 1%. So if you look at each locality, the ones that are highlighted in dark blue are the ones that have implemented rate increases in the last 2 years. And so that's kind of what's driving the 2.5% increase in our proposed collection rate. And so this is just a summary of the proposed rate increases that we're doing. And note that $8.54 equals $6.39 per CCF. So that's, again, a change of units. This is that collections rate. And in King William, they're the only ones left that has a capital recovery fee through 2028. And so West Point, theirs ended in fiscal year 21. So this will be the first year that they won't have a capital recovery rate. And so this is their rate for fiscal year 22. And then the flat monthly bill is based on 4,000 gallons per month. And this is what their flat monthly bill is. And so when you compare this to last year, it's a 6% monthly bill increase. So 9% increase in the treatment rate and a 2.5% increase in the collections rate gives you a 6% monthly bill increase for small communities. That's it. So next we're going to jump into surcharges. And just as a reminder, surcharges, it's a marginal cost. And so in our wastewater rate at $6.39, that assumes that the discharger is discharging at residential concentrations for these four constituents. And so if you're an industrial discharger and you discharge higher BOD or higher TN or higher TP, you pay the incremental cost from this threshold higher. You pay that difference. And so one of the things we did, we actually did it a couple of years ago. We didn't implement it last year because we just kept everything the same, was we changed the thresholds. So in our revenue policy, our P3 division is required to do a domestic wastewater survey every 5 years. And so what they found was that residential, these charge thresholds went higher. And so this is the percent difference for each one of those thresholds. And so if the thresholds go higher, so if this line is higher, that means the industrial dischargers would theoretically have a lower bill. And so that's one of the changes. Yes.
The reason those are probably going higher is because of the conservation of water, correct? So there's less dilution coming from every residential household because there's less water in use.
Yes, and it's more concentrated, correct. And so that's why we want to update it every 5 years to make sure that we're establishing the right thresholds. So. And so this is the proposed change in the surcharge rate. One of the things we want to change in our revenue policy is to incorporate moving averages. Again, this was something we were going to do last year, but we held everything constant because we wanted to have at least 5 years of a historical experience using the new version of how we're calculating surcharge rates. And so we want to use moving averages because it's so volatile. So you can see even with the moving averages between 2021 and 2022, almost a 37% difference in the BOD surcharge rate, and then a minus 21% in the TKN. So these are inversely related based on the BOD credit. So we're trying to dampen this volatility. And so with these changes, the increase in the surcharge threshold and these percent differences, I think the commission had a good idea, I think a couple of years ago, is to say, well, what's the impact on our top 10 customers? And this is what it is. And so, you know, a lot of the customers discharge both BOD and TKN. So these kind of wash out. The only one that doesn't do that is Pepsi-Cola. I think this is all BOD. And so their bill is going to go up by 32%, but still relatively small for Pepsi. And then a lot of these will decrease a lot. So it's a mixed bag. It depends on what everyone is using. And so again, this is just for their surcharge bills and the difference in their surcharge bills. And so this does not include their wastewater rate, which is going up by 9%. So this is just the surcharge impact. Okay, and no questions on that. I'll talk about our proposed new fog rate. And so if you recall, we have one hauled waste rate currently. And that hauled waste is could be mixed, it could be portable toilet, it could be those trucks that suck out your septic tank for the residential septics, but it also could be for these grease control devices for the fog, this fats, oils, and grease from restaurants. And so this is also something we were looking at doing last year because fog is just really nasty and it costs way more to treat than typical hauled waste. And so we had our rate modeler, we've had him do it like almost every year on evaluating a proposed rate for this, but we're deciding to implement it this year. And you can see for each category, how like for BOD and TSS, how much stronger fog is. And like I said, it's just a real pain to treat. And so what we're proposing is for the hauled waste to remain set at $17.17 per gallon. And so that's for these three types of hauled waste. And again, these are the pumper trucks that discharge directly to the plant. So there's no cost for conveyance in these rates. But the fog rate significantly more at 0.2737 per gallon. And so because fog impacts restaurants and we're coming out of the pandemic, one of our ideas was to approve this rate in July 1, but not implement it until January 2021. So that hopefully we'll have some normalcy. Restaurants will be back going again. And so that's one of the reasons why we're implementing this a little bit later.
Jay, are these prices that we're talking about, these are for haul rates for dump that are being brought in and just dumped, or is this actual rates being charged to restaurants?
No. Yeah. So we're just charging the haulers. And so okay. The haulers pass this on to their customers. And so that's one of the reasons the last time we changed the whole waste rate, we did another January 1 implementation. So the haulers had complained, they said, well, you're not giving us enough notice because we've got to notify our customers that this is, you know, down the pipe. And so they can adjust their budgets and things like that. And so that's why we're going with the January 1st rate so that there's time for communication of the new rates. And so that, again, they just pass this along to their customers.
Gotcha. How do we determine the fog based on the gallons dumped? I mean, is that a ratio that we're dealing with here? I mean, how is that split?
I don't have a P3. Ted, do you know like how in terms of haulers when they dump off at those facilities at Williamsburg, Atlantic, how the hauling system works?
So they basically self-report, and we do periodic testing to see what they're bringing. So our fog haulers typically are just in that business. So they're going around doing septic systems. I mean, not grease interceptors throughout the region and bringing that fog to us. So yeah, I mean, it's a combination of self-reporting and then us following up and checking behind them. So.
Okay. I wasn't real clear on how it was separated out.
And P3 really has a great relationship with all of our hauled waste haulers, knows what kind of business they're in, knows what they're doing. So I don't think there'll be any surprises here.
Okay. Thank you.
So from a marketing standpoint, I'm assuming we're going to be getting with these people basically one-on-one to show them, you know, what this rate history is, how it's affecting them, and how we're delaying the cost so that they can get on their feet again.
Yes, and that really was the main input on the delay was our lesson we learned last time we had a significant rate increase on hauled waste. The haulers reached out to us and said, hey, we don't mind, and we're willing to pay whatever it costs to do this, but we've got contracts in place and notification requirements to change rates and things like that, that they need time to do that. So P3 will be reaching out to all of our waste haulers, explaining the rate, the basis of the rate, and then when it will be implemented to give them enough time. And they'll start that upon your approval of the budget, and assuming that this ends up in the approved budget. Once that budget's approved in May, they will start that outreach directly to all the haulers.
Good.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if you want, we can share with you how all these rates are derived. But even in this fog rate, some fog is good. So we could sell some of this grease. So, you know, we're doing that new Grizzilla system at Mansman. And so this even incorporates the sale of some of that grease as well. So it's a lot of work goes into deriving these rates that go into it, and a lot of thought, because at the end of the day, they have to be defensible. So if somebody ever sue this to go to court, and we could just walk them through exactly how we did the math, and it's a lot of work that goes into some of these rates. So at the end of the day, it's like, it has to be absolutely defensible. So. Okay. Jumping into facility charge rates. Again, these are rates that typically developers pay when they get their permit. It's all based on the size of a meter, and it's to essentially, they're buying into the capacity of the existing wastewater system, and this is the formula. So a few years ago, we knew that the Chez-Liz plant was going to go offline. And so when we did the initial math, and you look at the net replacement value of the existing system and the HRSD's plant capacity, when you take a whole plant offline, it really impacts what the facility charges would be, especially a plant like Chez-Liz, where the capacity was 24 and a half million gallons per day. And so back in 2019, we started a three-year phase-in of change of the facility charges. And so last year, since we didn't make any changes, this is the third year of the proposed three-year phase-in. And you can see the most of the meters that pay facility charges are 5/8 inch, because that's the residential meter. And, you know, we're proposing it to go about $150 per meter. High percentage, but again, we didn't change it last year. Some of the bigger changes in terms of percentages are the 4 inches and up. But the reality is like, there's not that many meters that are 4 inches and up that go in, because a lot of the development are retros. They're not greenfield sites. And so we give developers credit for what the existing meter size was, even if they have to upsize a meter. So we give them the credit. So in terms of greenfield sites, brand new meters, 4 inches and up, it's pretty rare that they come up. So no questions on that. This is something new that we need to propose this year. So in Surrey County, HRSD owns the meters, and they are remote meters. And so they have their meter plus an antenna so that we can collect the data remotely. And so what we found is that some customers may damage the meters or the antennas, like if their water is shut off. And so what we need to add to the rate schedule that we don't currently have is a fee schedule to replace the antennas and the damaged meters. And apparently there's something called a register as well. So we just need to add that fee schedule to the rate book. That's So if there's no questions on rates and fees, all right, I'm going to jump into the proposed revenue chop policy changes. And so we talked about the fats, oils, and grease rate. We need to update the revenue policy to include and to define what fog is and differentiate that from hauled waste. Another new thing I think Ted talked to the commission about is to have a town wholesale rate. And I think we talked about this at the last commission meeting, that this is for the town of Exmoor. And so we need to have this wholesale rate in the revenue policy. And we're very specifically defining it to towns with a population of less than 2,000 and where the town is billed based on effluent meter data. So we want to make it very specific to who can qualify for this wholesale rate. And again, just a slight change to how the surcharge rates are calculated that we are going to be using moving averages now that we have enough historical data to do that using our new methodology. So the plan is on the revenue policy is that for the April commission meeting that we will have a black line document for y'all to review, but we would not seek approval for that policy until the May meeting to potentially be approved with the budget if the commission agrees. In terms of next steps, today is the finance meeting. We will have a draft budget to the commission on April 27th at the April 27th meeting, a month to review, and then formal budget adoption at the May meeting. We'll advertise all the rates in the newspaper, and then the budget would be effective July 1st. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. I know I had a lot of information in there and you asked questions all along, but I'd like to open it up.
I think the best news of this whole report is the reduction in the rates going out, another 10 years from now or 8 years from now. That's really fantastic.
Yeah, we wish it could have been more even, but it might be. You know, there's a lot of levers that Jay's still pulling over the next few years, and if we can get our operational costs under control and Swift ends up costing less to operate than we expect, there's still some potential that we're not going to be at these levels forever, but much improved. So Jay and his team, and really a lot of it was the ability to get the WIFIA funds, and overstate the challenges they've had to go through to get that WIFIA loan locked in. And it continues as they started the work on the tranche 2 this week. So the finance team's done a fabulous job.
I concur. Do you anticipate any additional, how do we see going forward some of the rules? Have we grappled with what we're going to take with this new administration coming in and their, I guess the direction they're probably going to head as far as environmental issues? Do we have a crystal ball of what we're looking at here in the future?
I think we're
how it will impact us.
Yeah, I think we're in pretty good shape. The legislation that was passed with last General Assembly session that Jay referred to, with specific projects listed and schedules and performance data, has our major projects in there. So we think that locks that down. It's one of the reasons we worked hard to try to get a legislative solution as opposed to a administrative WIP 3 solution. And so now that it's in legislation, it's a little more challenging for a quick change. So I think on the state side, as far as nutrients and Chesapeake Bay, we're in good shape. There's still probably some uncertainty on the federal side, a bit of pendulum swinging pretty far to the progressive side of the house, as you're well aware. But I think we've got really good relationships with even some of the folks that are getting appointed at EPA or being proposed. So I think we can manage that. I don't think there's going to be a lot of real unusual things. PFAS continues to be a big unknown and how that gets regulated. And they've put a ton of money into this, the latest infrastructure bill for PFAS remediation. And, you know, in the wastewater world, we can get it out of water. Right? And we've proven that at Swift that, you know, through granular activated carbon, we can deal with PFAS. What we can't deal with very well right now, and there's still a lot of research needed, is on the solid side. So our biosolids, where it accumulates and we pull it out of the system, there's not a comparable way to remove PFAS from biosolids. So we are busy doing a lot of research. We've partnered with several folks. You've approved a number of studies that are ongoing to determine the fate of PFAS compounds in biosolids, especially as they're land applied. So I'd say that's the one known unknown right now. Probably the biggest one with a hammer hanging over our head is, what does the country do about PFAS and solids?
Talking in terms of solids, Ted, how close are we getting to the break-even point where we can treat our solids so that they get into that class A for reusable as fertilizer or what have you? How close are we getting to that point versus just hauling away?
So the THP project at Nansemond, at Atlantic is producing class A solids now. Not really finding a significant difference in the value. It's much easier to handle, so it should reduce some of our operating costs. It's easier on our contractors to apply because they're not limited to a very narrow application season. Our farmers and neighbors are going to like it better because it has a much lower odor. But I don't think we'll see significant change. There will be a change in hauling because there's less volume to haul. It's much drier product. So the amount that goes on the fields will be reduced significantly based on the amount that we produce. So there's savings, but they're all, you know, really incremental and hard to discover exactly where they all are. We will, I think, once we're fully operational and making, you know, all the Cheslis flows there, we'll go back and do a post implementation economic analysis to see, you know, how has this benefited us? What are the real savings? And we'll base that on real performance data. So we try to do that on most big projects like this. It'll also help inform whether we want to move more biosolids by truck to Atlantic to take advantage of the capacity that's there, full capacity that's there, and whether we want to expand it. So I'd say a lot of unknowns still on our overall solids handling plan. I think Chris walked you through, Chris Wilson, last commission meeting, walked through sort of where we are, and there are a variety of options we're trying to keep open as we move forward, but definitely with an eye on cost.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Oh, Mr. Chair, I did want to mention one more thing. I would be remiss in just thanking the entire finance department staff and all the HRSD staff in getting to this point and pulling the budget together this year. It was a tremendous effort, as it is every year, but I just wanted to thank our staff. A lot of them are on the call today to getting to this point to build a presentation, to bring the good news to the commission, and to get to this point right now. But the tremendous amount of work, we have such a great staff to help to get to where we are. So
those that have their cameras available, I think we should turn them on so the commission can see who you are. Anybody brave enough to do that? Come on. There we go. There's Aaron, Kathy, Lee was there for a minute. That's the only people that are brave enough to turn their cameras on. So. Appreciate it.
Yeah, such a great staff. I'm just so lucky and blessed because it is a huge team effort. There's no one person that can do and show pull this presentation together. It's a truly a team effort. So I'm super thankful to have such a great team.
Jay, I don't think I'd ever be remiss in announcing how proud you are of your team, Ted, as well as the team leadership. We all know that it couldn't be done without the folks behind the scenes working and putting this all together. I know it's kind of a difficult year, everybody dealing with the Zoom and not being on hand to have a face-to-face meeting. It's been a challenge for everybody in this world. Not mention that HRSD has faced a lot of challenges in that task as well. And we kudos to HRSD and the folks that work for it make it all happen. It doesn't appear that we've missed a beat in anything that we've done. So you guys have really done an outstanding job of keeping HRSD on task and ahead of the competition. So many thanks.
You're here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Good thing. All right. Do we have any more questions or anything else we need to bring up at this time?
So, Jay, you want to just quickly talk about next few steps? I think you did earlier, but let's refresh as we go out of here.
Next few steps, I'll do a much a more abbreviated version of this for the commission meeting in April. Again, we'll bring the finance policy, the black line, in April. We've got the LOC. Another thing that I didn't mention today is we're closing on the LOC in April, April 29th. So Chair Elifson, we're going to have to schedule a time to get your signature for that. Get a great deal on that LOC rate. It's 39 basis points plus whatever the SIFMA rate is. SIFMA rate's at 8 basis points. And so is that 47 on 50 million. So another great rate. Again, we always try to optimize to get the lowest cost of capital anytime we can. And so that's even lower than our WIFIA rate. So we'll be hitting the LOC until that climbs to a point where we need to start hitting WIFIA. So again, a lot of decisions that kind of get made on a daily basis on how we manage the finance department and just try to do a good job for our ratepayers.
And the draft budget will be in the package or will be available at the meeting?
Yep, the draft budget should be available at the meeting. Ideally for the package, but I don't want to put our staff like in that position. So I'll just say by the meeting.
Okay.
Just in case.
All right. Fantastic job. Thanks for the update, Jay. We look forward to the presentation next board meeting. Ted, do you have anything else?
No, sir. Just appreciation of everybody's time today to show this kind of interest and understand it's a great deep dive into the finances and the forward thinking of the organization and the support we get from the commission. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Just before you came on, some of us were discussing WEFTEC. Have you heard any?